So what I will show you today is a bit background on domain name system, and then we will see what are the main problems in DNS and the solutions to protect DNS. And then we'll look into these solutions, what is promising, what is possible, and whether there are challenges and obstacles towards correct adoption of them. Good, so I'm sure you all know DNS, but briefly recap. DNS, domain name system, is one of the basic building blocks in the internet, translates domain names to IP addresses or names to values, and is used by a variety of applications and systems as well as users. In DNS, you have a client who is, in this example, Hermes. It sends a request to a caching DNS resolver. Resolvers provide services to clients or to services on their networks and look up resources in the corresponding domains, which are hosted in zone files in name servers. Okay, so in this talk, we will be focusing on the name server side, this yellow book. What are the main threats against DNS? And if we, in this talk, we are going to look at correctness of responses. Imagine if you have someone who can inject an incorrect response and have the resolver, caching resolver, accept it, cache it, and then provide it to all its customers. For instance, think about providing an incorrect response to Google or caching resolvers on other networks. Okay, so this is called DNS cache poisoning. If the resolver accepts and caches the record and provides it in response to clients, then all the clients will be redirected to incorrect machines. In fact, the question is, so how common is this DNS cache poisoning? Does it actually happen in the internet? So the incidents are common. Some are done by governments. Others are done by attackers and other organizations, as well, and measurements, of course, by researchers. So you know there are different organizations which have programs for monitoring DNS requests and injecting DNS responses. It's done by a number of governments, public. This is a public knowledge, as well as, for instance, for censorship by Chinese government. Incorrect DNS responses or DNS responses with spoofed values were observed in the wild. Recently, CMU published on their blog site that they noticed incorrect responses for email servers, namely mapping email servers to incorrect IP addresses. And also, there is work on measuring how vulnerable are we to cache poisoning. The fact that someone sends an incorrect response, it doesn't actually guarantee that this response will be accepted and cached. It's not easy to overwrite in resolvers an already cached record. And there is a number of works who measure that. One is by Chomp et al. It was in PEM 2014. They looked at open resolvers, and most of them, open resolvers, most of which are either home routers or malicious devices, and they checked how they could inject incorrect responses, whether it's possible to inject spoofed records into those devices. We did a work, which is at Infocom 2017, which performed a large-scale evaluation of different networks, enterprises, and public DNS services like Google, OpenDNS, and others, evaluating injection of records into DNS caches. And here you can see on the right bottom side, you can see the statistics for different type of networks that we measured and success probability. So we defined here in this example 14 different ways to inject records into caches, which enables overwriting already cached records. And we found that if you look at the rightmost column, you will see for these different three types of networks, you will see that more than 90% of popular networks, and when I say popular networks, I'm referring to Alexa 1 million, are vulnerable to at least one type of injection. Namely, you can override the already cached record. And so there are such attacks. Such attacks are possible. And what can we do to protect the DNS against the attacks? Of course, if you can redirect client to an incorrect machine, you can do a lot of bad things like credential theft, eavesdropping, install malware, and others. So there are many defenses that were proposed for DNS. Some standardized, others not, cryptographic, non-cryptographic, but the most promising defense seems to be DNSSEC, and that's what we will look at. Domain name security extensions was proposed actually in the 90s, in mid-90s, standardized, and there are many standards and follow-up standards for DNSSEC. And the question is, what is the situation with DNSSEC and how deployed is it? DNSSEC is just digital signatures over DNS records. And clients can receive these signed records and validate them, which allows the client to decide if the record is authentic or not. It's a simple solution. You just use digital signatures and you validate them. But actually, it's not trivial. And the deployment is a challenge. And also, security is a challenge. There was a work on client-side validation of Leon et al. And at USENIX 13, which checked correctness of validation by the clients. So they generated incorrect signatures and checked whether clients would reject the signatures or accept them. And they found that many accept incorrect signatures or perform incorrect validation. Now, in this work, we will look at the name server side, the domains, and we will see how many domains are signed and whether the signed domains are secure against DNS cache poisoning attacks for clients which perform correct DNSSEC validation. And that's the focus of this work. So what we did, we analyzed 2.1 million DNSSEC keys in 900,000, almost 1 million signed domains. We focused on RSA keys because this is the majority. And we found that actually many of the signed domains are vulnerable to attacks, not the signed domains, but the customers using the signed domains. Even if they validate DNSSEC, they're vulnerable to attacks. So let's look at the statistics. Here you can see on the left side, you can see a graph which shows collection of signed domains over a 6 months period, starting with March and until October. It shows the number of all the top-level domains versus signed top-level domains. So all top, it's not clear here, but the bottom line is the signed domains, and the upper line is the all domains, the total number of domains. So what you can see here in this graph is that actually both lines grow similarly. And this is surprising because if you looked at this before, a couple of years ago, the difference was significant. So now 90% of top-level domains are signed. Why is that? Because there is an instruction from ICANN for automated domain signing. Nowadays, when you register, registrars have to enable automated domain signing for new domains. Therefore, when there is a new domain registered, you can see that actually the growth in signed domains is similar to the growth of new top-level domains. If we look at second-level and third-level domains on the right-hand side, it's a little bit different. The line of signed domains is really at the bottom, so the situation is not so good. And the growth is much slower. Good, so let's look at the algorithms which are used. Top-level domains use mainly or only different versions of RSA. And second and third-level domains use also other algorithms, but the majority is still RSA. So that is our focus. We focus on domains signed with RSA algorithms. And I'll show you a bit of the results, which we found. The problems in the signed domains are as follows. We found domains which are signed with shared moduli, namely a number of domains use keys which all have the same moduli. Shared keys, a registrar is signing all domains with the same key, or shared primes. And all of those different practices, of course, exposed to attacks. I'll briefly mention why this is happening and what it causes. Okay, so sharing public RSA modules is a known bad practice, of course, because if an attacker can sign his domain and obtain the public modulus and the private keys, he could recover also keys of another domain signed with the same modulus. Where does it happen? What happens is that many registrars when they sign domains, using these automated procedures, they reuse the same N. And if an attacker knows which domain it wants to attack or which domain it wants to poison in some customer network, the attacker can register its own domain under the same registrar, have it domain signed, have the domain signed, and then using its knowledge of its private and public keys, it can recover the public keys of the private signing key of the domain which it wants to attack. And this is just not a new thing. It's a direct properties of RSA. Given P and Q, of course, you can reverse RSA encryption, and given the private and public key signing pair, one can factor the modules and obtain P and Q. And given some D, some signing key for N, the attacker can recover all the other Ds. So even if the other domains use other distinct D pairs, the attacker could still recover them. Notice that not all registrars and DNS hosting providers allow access to the keys which they use to sign the domain, but many do. And I'll mention at the end whether this practice of preventing access to keys is secure. Okay, so this exposes to cache poisoning. And the problem is, in the study that we conducted for signed four resolvers, DNS caches, which cache signed responses versus unsigned responses, as I'll show you, you will see that resolvers assign higher trust level to signed records, which means the cache poisoning attacks become much easier. So incorrect use of crypto is worse than no crypto at all and exposes to new attacks. In the graph, you can see the fraction of domains which are signed with shared moduli. Again, we collect this over a period of... we constantly collect this on our website. You could see the data, but here it's over a period of 180 days. Now let's look at shared keys. Many registrars just reuse the same key pair to sign all domains. And this is also, of course, a bad practice. These registrars typically do not provide the domain owners with access to their keys, but that's not a good practice. First of all, if you compromise one registrar, then you compromise all of these domains that are signed with this key pair. And registrar compromises are common. Recently, there was an attack against checked registrar, I think. I'll get to it. And so we see huge key reuse among different domains and registrars. So an example is large French registrar has over 63,000 domains signed with only two public keys. So it uses two key pairs for signing all of its domains. And you know, when you register a domain, you have an option to sign the domain yourself or to have your registrar sign it for you. Often, there is no option to sign yourself. You just have the registrar generate the keys and sign for you. And this is exactly when this happens, this key reuse. Third problem is shared primes. Moduli with shared prime factors, they enable recovery of keys by calculation of greatest common divisor. Now, I'm just going to mention that we're still in disclosure phase, so I'm not exposing the names of the registrars or the domains that are vulnerable. But once everyone patches, you could see all of this on our website. What we did here is relatively recently, at Usenix 2012, Henninger et al. Did a study of all the devices which use SSH and SSL devices, which use keys that can be factored due to vulnerabilities in GCD. So we used simply their algorithm to compare all the different moduli pairs and to identify those that have GCD, which is greater than 1. And here in this table, you can see an example of all the different GCD values for some selected domains that we found. So why is this bad, and what can one do with this? Vulnerable DNSSEC keys facilitate cache poisoning attacks, as I mentioned earlier. In this table, you can see an example of 18 different payloads which we defined for overriding already cached values. Now look at bind 9 10 without DNSSEC and with DNSSEC. And bind with DNSSEC is much less vulnerable to records injections. So in every row you can see yes or no. This means whether it's vulnerable to that payload or not. So look at payload number 3, row number 3, NS. This means you return a response where in the answer you give an IP address for a domain which is actually a name server which is owned by an attacker. And the bind without DNSSEC would not overwrite the already cached record, while bind without with DNSSEC would. Sorry, bind with DNSSEC would not overwrite, while bind without DNSSEC would. So clearly, if attacker can create a domain, create a domain which would allow it and sign it, which would allow it recovery of secret signing key, and then use it to sign spoof records, the cache poisoning attacks become much easier. And injecting records is much simpler. Look at the difference in the two columns. So this is just an example for bind. Of course, there are others, but we see clearly that DNSSEC validation always prevents attacks and or exposes to attacks, of course, if you use it, if the domains are signed incorrectly. This is because all the caches assign highest trust level to signed records. So countermeasures, hiding keys. Can you hide keys? And what about the existing DNSSEC checkers? You cannot hide keys. As I said, there are common attacks against registrars like Webnik. Also, for the way DNS works, you may want to have some of the name servers under a different registrar and not under the same registrar. Not all registrars support DNSSEC, so you have to sign your records yourself. So it's not possible to not have access to keys or to prevent customers from having access to keys. And this is not a good practice. And other registrars which do not hide the keys, of course, also are vulnerable to the same thing. What about DNSSEC checkers? There are many DNSSEC checkers, but they don't detect these vulnerabilities because they validate the record, the generated signatures or keys in isolation. The tool which we designed collects all the signatures and keys, stores in a database, and then performs pairwise calculation and comparison for all the new and existing keys. This collection we perform periodically on a daily basis. Okay, so this is the mechanism. The mechanism collects keys from different sources. We use different techniques to make it fast and efficient. We report statistics on we process the keys, and we report statistics on our website. You can see the link to the website in the paper. And in addition to statistics, we also allow validation. That's how it looks, the website. We allow validation of domains and keys. So let's say your registrar generated a key for your domain. You want to validate if it's secure or not. You can use our website. We enable key validation. You can also validate by domain name. Here you can see the last one is key validation before that domain. Give a domain name. We will retrieve the keys ourselves, and we will check whether there are any problems with the keys. Okay, and so conclusions. Clearly, correct deployment of cryptography is a challenge in the internet. It's not an easy problem. We have many examples for that. BGP security, SSL, TLS, there are constantly problems. And randomness generation is also not a trivial thing. Of course, when you have to adopt something, there are other questions that come into play with registrars, example, and DNS hosting providers. They have to generate fresh randomness each time. And it's natural that they would have to adjust the cryptographic solutions to suit their needs. So DNSSEC is just another proof that adopting new mechanisms, and in particular crypto, is not simple. Even as simple as signatures, it's a difficult problem. And I said, there were problems on the client side, but also on the server side, as we should in this work. Good, then thank you very much, and I'll take your questions.
So, questions? Yes, I have one. Often these type of talks are presenting negative results. I've never seen a talk where somebody said, I want to see if deployed crypto is secure, and they come back and say, yeah, everything's done right.
Yeah,
when are we going to see that?
That's an excellent question, because you would not get accepted to present your talk. I think it's easier to present things that you break.
So have you ever had experience where you checked into something, it was secure, and you just didn't report it because it wouldn't be accepted?
But more seriously, it is simply a difficult problem. If you look at, we recently had a paper at NDSS for RPKI adoption with ROAs. A different problem, but also has to do with the crypto and how the crypto is used in practice. So designing cryptographic schemes, we have like 40-odd years of crypto research with beautiful schemes and results. How much of this is actually used in practice? And other question, how much of this is actually used securely in practice? So using crypto, even simple crypto like signatures, is a challenge. And I'm sure one day this will happen, but it will take that we will present talks with how adopted crypto, how wonderfully it works, and we measured it, and it's efficient, and it doesn't, no deployment obstacles. And one example to this is ICANN, for instance. ICANN means well and requires to automate this DNSSEC signing. Otherwise, domains will not get signed, and they were not. And as you could see in the graph, new domains are immediately signed, which is a good thing. But this automation comes at cost of security. So it has to be automated to remove the human error from the equation, but it has to be automated correctly.
Yeah, I'm Henry Corgan Gibbs from Stanford. And it seems like what might have happened here is that ICANN made this requirement, and people did sort of the bare minimum to fulfill this requirement to actually sign these records. I'm wondering if you were going to tell ICANN, or if you had the power to make more requirements on these domains, what would you like to change? What requirement would you add that would avoid some of these problems?
So it's a good question. I disclosed this work to some... I am involved with ICANN and IDF. I disclosed this work to some network operators like French Registry and others. And they said, I remove this recommendation from the paper. I will go nuts if ICANN forces me to do anything. So the domain operators, network operators, they don't like recommendations or any enforcements from ICANN. I think what ICANN would be good if ICANN did is provided the mechanisms to do that, not just an instruction to sign all domains, but actually give a mechanism that would do that, that would validate that the keys are generated correctly. So, for instance, the problem with shared primes with the GCD that was not one, as you saw, the problem with that is, I guess, bit flips. We try to reproduce it, and if you run it many times enough, you get bit flips. And so general, simple tools could identify these problems, right? But if you don't sign the domains, and it's signed by your registrar, you kind of assume that it's all done correctly. So what ICANN should have done is provided, in addition to the instructions, should have also provided tools to these registrars that they could use for generation of randomness, for generation of keys, and for validation that it's all done correctly at the end. And actually, that's what we did at the end. This mechanism for collecting the keys, validating the keys, and allowing everyone, when you generate new keys, to check if there was a bit flip, if there is another key with a shared prime. This is kind of what ICANN can use for that purpose. Thanks.
And we're out of time, so okay. Thank you, Haya, again.
Thanks.